Hello, I'm Barney Kessel, and welcome to my jazz guitar improvisational course. I'm going to be explaining and showing you many techniques that are going to help you to become a better jazz improviser. Before we start, you should know that I expect you to have played at least 1 year, that you have had time to develop calluses on your fingers and strength in your hand, and that you have studied some basic music theory. It will help a lot in this course to have that kind of a background. And now before we begin, I'd like to give you an A440 pitch so that you can tune your guitar to mine, because we will be playing together during this course. And now we're ready to begin lesson number one. I'd like to discuss a very important thing, and that is how to develop the ability to play what you think. This is something that every great improviser has. If you can't play what you think, then you're reduced to playing formulas and licks and devices and patterns that you see on the fingerboard. And this is very mechanical and very plastic, and it has no energy, has no spontaneous feelings, no creativity. So it's very important that you develop the ability to play what you hear. And there's two steps involved. One is to develop the ability to play what you hear, and the second is be sure that what you hear is worth playing. Because just because you can play what you hear doesn't mean that it has any real musical value. So those are two things to keep in mind. Now, the technique that I wish to tell you about right now is to think about striking a chord on the guitar without intellectualizing it, without naming the notes. If you were not to find it immediately on the guitar, you might get lost because you wouldn't remember a very long line. So somewhere in there is a pretty good amount of notes. So you imagine this line of music. Try to make it something in your mind that you create that is not a scale and is not an arpeggio, but it is very much a melody. That is, it has a rise and a fall, as good melodies do. It's something that you could sing and get great satisfaction from singing this melody. It's something that you could add words to. It's melodic, rather than just a scale or exercise or etude. So we strike a chord, and we imagine in our mind something. First thing is we imagine it in our mind, and then we, after internalizing it or hearing it in our thoughts or in our mind, we then externalize it by either humming or singing or whistling it. And I give you all three choices because many people say, well, I can't sing, so then hum, or I can't hum, then whistle. But in some way, you externalize this thought you had. Now, when you've externalized it, you have stated this both within yourself and outside two times, and now you're ready to find it on the guitar. Try to find it somewhere near the nut of the guitar, somewhere in the first position of the guitar. And as you gain familiarity with finding more and more lines in the lower positions of the guitar, then try to find them in higher positions, in the same key, and then moving to other keys. But you try to later to find as many different positions on the guitar to play that same little melody that you made up. So I'm going to do one for you right now. I'm going to play a chord. I'm not thinking of what the chord is, the name of the chord, the notes in the chord. I'm just going to savor the chord and let something come to my mind that I think would fit, that would be in agreement with this chord. And hopefully it is a melody rather than an exercise. Now I hear it in my mind. I'm going to externalize it by whistling it. Now I'm going to do another one. I'm going to find one that's a little more challenging, a little more difficult to hear. Now I'm going to try to find it in a lower position. Sometimes you will notice I'm closing my eyes. When you close your eyes, you can hear much better. You can also hear your thoughts better. You can hear what's in your mind better when you close your eyes. And you can also hear music better when you close your eyes. So sometimes this helps. Keep that in mind. Now, as I played this, I tried to find it on the guitar. If you do not find every note right away, don't get discouraged. Don't go back to playing these licks. Don't go back to playing the formulas and these patterns that you see on the fingerboard. But remember, the only way to get good at making up something is to make it up and keep making it up and not get discouraged. And if you make a little mistake, so what? You do it over again, and each time you'll get closer. And finally, you'll reach a point where it almost seems as though it's simultaneous, although it's just a very short time span between you thinking about it and being able to play it. I'm going to try to think of something, whistle it, and play it at the same time. Now, it's not exactly the same time, but it's so fast that it almost seems as though it were the same time. That's the idea. And when you get to that point, you will have really mastered the first step that's necessary in becoming a jazz improviser. Now, I'm going to play several chords for you, and I want you to listen to the chord, hear a melody anywhere from 6 to 9 notes in length in your mind, and then I want you to externalize it by whistling, singing, or humming it, and then finally find it on the guitar in a low position somewhere. And as you become more proficient, do more of these exercises. Try to find more places on the fingerboard to play the same melody that you created and find other keys. Here's the first chord. Another thing that's very important in improvisation is developing what I call interval sense, not to be confused with a sense of intervals. A sense of intervals is when you strike one note and then another note and you're able to name the distance that the second note is from the first. That's not what I mean in this case. By interval sense, what I mean is that at any time that you're playing, you feel how far it is from the note you're on to the very next note, whether that second note is above the previous one or below it. But there's the feeling. For example, if you were at a keyboard and you were playing Pop Goes the Weasel, as you play along, you go, bo da 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 di di dum, pop. There is a feeling of how far that is. And it's only by experimenting, by trying to guess, by trying to go with your feelings as to how far it is that you develop this ability. You will do one of three things when you attempt to do this. You will either judge the right distance to the next note, or you will fall short of it, or you will go beyond it. And as you continue to do this and make mistakes, you will find that the same kind of mistake prevails in a great number of cases. That is important. Now, a lot of people tell me from time to time that they cannot hear a chord and imagine a melody within themselves that's 6 to 9 notes long. And if that's the case with you, if you really cannot hear a melody internally, another way that I can suggest to you that will help you to be able to play what you think is think about all of the songs you've learned during your lifetime that are what you would call folk songs or nursery rhymes, all the little things that you sang when you were a child. You know those very well in your mind. You've always known those. Try to play those on the guitar. Start in the key of C. Start in the low positions and try to play these songs. When it's possible, try to play them an octave higher or an octave lower. I'll give you an example. For example, Oh Susanna in the key of C. I'm thinking about it and it would come out like this. I could also play it an octave higher in this particular case. Not always can you do this, but in this case I could. Now, the beauty of this is, because you already know these songs and have known them all your life, when you make a mistake and didn't employ the proper interval sense and you went to the wrong place, you went too high or too low to go to the next note, you will know it immediately because you already know that song. So do focus on this point of learning and work with these nursery rhymes and these folk songs. How long do you stay with these? Until you can play them. Until you can play all of these songs accurately. Don't embellish them. Don't smear or slide or anything. Just play each note exactly as it's supposed to be. And start in the key of C and learn all of these songs in the key of C. Move up into other positions of the key of C and continue to learn them. And then learn in other keys. I suggest that as points of learning that you learn things after the key of C in the key of one sharp and one flat and then two sharps and two flats and so on until you've mastered all seven sharps and seven flats. They realize it or not, and that is, they treat the melody in this way. They don't add any notes or take away any notes from the melody, but they simply change the value of the notes so that maybe where you had several notes go by in a certain meter, you've substituted different values. Maybe you're playing some of them faster and some of them slower, but it ends up that it fills the same amount of measures. I'll show you what I mean. Here's an example. There's a melody that I'm going to show you now, and there are three phrase variations under it. And I'm going to play the melody, and then I'm going to play each of the variations as is shown. And you'll notice that all of them fill up the same amount of time in the measures, that they start at the same time and they end at the same time, and there are no extra notes. And the only difference between the original melody and the variations are the change in note value or the time value of the notes. So I'm going to begin, and instead of counting 1, 2, 3, 4, I'm going to just simply count 3, 4, and I hope that you understand that it's 3, 4 of a bar that would have been 1, 2, 3, 4. This gives us more time for more information in this course. So I'm going to start now. 3, 4. Now that's the melody. Now here is the first variation, and notice it almost sounds the same, but it's phrased different. 3, 4. Here is the second variation. 3, 4. And here is the third and final variation. 3, 4. Now, if you listen very carefully, and also if you look at the music, and perhaps even play along if you can, while you're looking at the music, you can hear that subtle difference in the time. If you weren't paying attention, they would almost seem identical. But as you begin to probe and listen, you'll find that there is a considerable difference just from the phrasing. And there are any number of ways that you can phrase a passage. It depends on your own personal taste, your discernment, and what you think is appropriate for the music. So make up your own phrasing to any songs. Now, I'm going to play a melody for you now and play several ways of phrasing it that should show you that you never hear anything but the melody, but you'll hear me playing it in many different ways. And this is one way to play a melody and to, at the same time, exhibit your own originality, your own individuality. The question comes up quite often, why do they phrase the melody? It's to keep it from sounding square. Well, why is it written square? Square meaning that it has no syncopation to it. Why is it done this way? It's done this way because many publishers write sheet music, and they write the sheet music in such a way that it can be read very easily without having offbeats, without having syncopation. And when it's written in this square manner, there is a greater chance that more people can play it, and therefore more people will buy the sheet music because there is the believable hope they'll be able to play the music. But once you get the music and you read through the squareness of the melody, it's up to you to find your own phrase variations. And this will allow you to play the melody, but as you do it, you pump some kind of life and vitality into it. Even though you haven't changed one melody note, by staggering the time, you phrase it and create more interest, plus exhibit your own individuality. I'd like to discuss another way to handle the melody. We've talked about phrasing to make the melody seem warmer and more personal. There's another way that we can deal with the melody that will move us towards improvising, and this is called ornamentation. And ornamentation is really dressing up the melody. It's just like when we go to a party, you know, when the lady wears a comb in her hair, or she wears a ribbon in her hair, or a man wears a particular thing around his neck. It's ornamentation, it's dress up. And this is what we do to the notes that we play. And by doing this, we again add a personal expression, and we give the note a certain character. Now, I'll show you what I mean. For instance, there's a thing called fingered glissando. Now, the fingered glissando would be like this. You can almost see and hear the fingers moving because the pick is only attacking the first note. But listen to the fingered glissando. Moving in the opposite direction, it would be. Now, there's another way to descend or ascend, which is more severe. It's called a portamento. And that is, you do not move from one note to the next, up or down, by gradually fingering in that direction, but it's a deliberate, brusque, and brisk move, like this. That's a portamento. There's another thing called a smear or a fall off, and you've heard many bands do that when they play a chord. Instead of just going, they'll play. Now that's fall off, is a smear or a fall off. And there's another thing you can do when you're playing these notes to give them a certain character. One of the things would be to bend a note into its pitch. That is, you don't hit the ultimate pitch. You don't play and attack the ultimate pitch, but you bend into it so that instead of playing, you would play in that manner. I'll do that again. Instead of, you would bend into. And that gives it a character. Another thing you can do are called grace notes. Instead of just playing the notes and hitting them right on the head squarely as they really are, you precede it by playing to add the ornamentation with the phrasing. This opens up a lot of possibilities for you, and you're still staying with the melody. Quite often, musicians will listen to the melody being played in this manner, and they will thoroughly enjoy the melody. There are very few musicians who have developed the art of playing melody and making it interesting. These two ways that I've discussed with you are ways where you do not leave the melody, and yet you make it really live through the coloration you give it, through the ornamentation, and through the metric feeling that you get by phrasing it. Now, I have written a song especially for this course, and it's something that I'm going to play for you now, and I would like you to hear the melody straight, and after you hear it the way I wrote it, I will then play it again, and this time I will use ornamentation and phrasing of the melody and not include any extra notes. And I have created a rhythm track for this so that I could play the melody for you against a backing that I created previously. So here we go with a song that I've created for you called Take It Easy. One, two, one, two, three. Now, when you're playing a melody such as I wrote, or any kind of melody that you play in a straightforward manner, you want to exhibit great taste and discretion in your playing. You want to not overdo the phrasing and not overdo the ornamentation so that the melody is disguised. Rather, through good taste and sparingly, employ these ways of changing the melody and yet exhibit the good taste. So at this time, I'm going to play this rhythm track for you once again, and this time I'm going to phrase the melody and also use ornamentation. One, two, one, two, three. I would like to play a rhythm pattern for you and have you join me, first of all, playing the melody as I wrote it, and it will be indicated on the screen for you, and after that, to use the same backing that I give you at this time and play along and make your own ornamentation and your own phrasing. You might start out by simply phrasing the melody, and then later use ornamentation, and finally, playing it over and over, you might use both the phrasing and the ornamentation. So I'm going to play this for you right now, and I'm going to count this off so that you can come in with me. I will count two measures for you in this manner. I will go one, two, one, two, three, and I will leave the fourth beat silent. So here we go. One, two. One, two, three. I'd like to discuss something about improvisation that's a very, very interesting little bit of information, and it's about fills. Now, fills or fill-ins are little bits of music that you can make up and use in areas of the music. Namely, when you arrive at a point in the music that a note comes to rest on a whole note or one of longer duration, or a rest where there's complete silence of one measure or more, this is an excellent opportunity to put your own little thing in there that fits. It doesn't detract from the melody, and it gives you a chance to voice your own individual musical feelings. So it's very interesting and something we should take advantage of. And while it's not truly, in the full sense, a complete abandonment of the melody, it is a little space that we can use to put ourselves into the music. I like them. I like to play songs that have these fills, and I want you to be aware of it and use the opportunity to come in and play some of your own music when these things occur. Now, why we have them is quite often the reason is because the song comes to rest on a note and it sustains, and there's nothing really going on. We need something at that point because the melody has either come to rest or there's silence. That's one reason that we use them, is because there is a need, in a sense, there, if we wish to do something with the melody. Another thing about it is that they occur in some songs and don't occur in others. So we just want to be sure that we're aware when they do occur. And if we wish to, we can exercise the option to take advantage at that point. Now, I have chosen a song to play for you, and later I want you to play, and I will accompany you. And this is a song that is one that offers excellent examples of places in the song to use fills. It's called Song of the Islands, and I'm going to play it for you now. I've made a background so that I can play the melody for you and you can hear it against the background. I'm going to play the melody for you the first time through, just as it was written. 1, 2, 3, 4. See them. There will be the measures that are in color. At that particular point, I am going to, as a first variation for you, I'm going to make a little fill. It's going to be a fill based on the chord that is being played at that time, but what I'm going to play would be some sort of a scale-like variation, a scale-like fill, a scale-like pattern based on the chord at the moment. So here is the first variation, which is the scale-like variation. 1, 2, 3, 4. Now that was the scale-like variation. Another way that we can handle this is when it comes time to play those fills in those areas that I mentioned, we can treat it as arpeggios. And so at that point where we fill, the material that we would use to fill there would be arpeggios of the chords that are involved at the moment. So once again, here is Song of the Islands with the arpeggio treatment. 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, another way that we can handle this would be to just purely improvise in any free manner as long as it's in agreement with the chord. So once again, here is a free improvised manner dealing with Song of the Islands. 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, I'd like to play it for you and have you join me and play against my accompaniment. First, play the melody as it's indicated, and then use this over and over again to play for yourself and try the same things that I have shown you just now by playing the scale-like variation and then playing the arpeggio variation and then improvise freely. Any thoughts that come to you at those areas that we discussed that fit the chords. So here I am playing the accompaniment of Song of the Islands for you, and I want you to join me. And I'm counting this off for you in the following manner. I will count 1, 2, 3, 4 of the first measure, leave the downbeat of the second measure blank, and you come in on 2, 3, and 4 of the second measure playing the pickups of this song. 1, 2, 3, 4. The next thing I'd like to discuss with you are turnarounds. Now, turnarounds deal with something that you play, a fill, but you play it at a specific place in a song. Now, most pop songs that we have in America and all over the world are really based on a 32-bar type of construction. There's what we call an AABA, that is, there is 8 measures followed by another 8 measures that's very similar, and then a little different melody called the bridge. And then we go back to 8 measures of material that was very much like in the first and second 8 measures. So we have 8, 8, 8, and 8. The third 8 is different from the others, and it's called the bridge. Now, the turnaround in a song like that usually will occur at the 7th and 8th measures, and at the 15th and 16th measure. Now, the reason it's called turnaround is because at the 7th and 8th measure, it turns around and repeats that 8 measures again. Now, at the 15th and 16th measure, it leads on to the bridge. At the very end, the last 2 measures of the 32-bar song, the 31st and 32nd bars, are not a turnaround if the song comes to rest. But if it leads on into another chorus, then that 31st and 32nd bar is also a turnaround. It means it turns around and goes back to another 8 bars of what was previously there. Now, there is a kind of inconsistency, but it's still used this way. It's inconsistent in that the 15th and 16th bars do not turn back around and repeat that same melody, but goes on to the bridge. However, we in music do refer to the 7th and 8th, the 15th and 16th measure, and the 31st and 32nd, if it again leads to a new chorus, as the turnaround area. That's where the turnaround occurs. And usually a melody will come to rest on a sustained note, or there will be silence, a rest. That is another place that we can make a fill. So we call the area where this occurs the turnaround. And we call what we play, what we played on the turnaround. That's how we refer to it, the material that we played on the turnaround. Now, I'm going to use a song that I have previously played for you in this course, one that I wrote especially for this course, Take It Easy, and I'm going to play it for you and play the melody up until the area where there is a turnaround. At that time, I will fill in, and I will, first of all, use scale-like material, scale patterns that fit the chords of the turnaround. So now I'm going to play this for you. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Thank you. Now, I'm going to play it once again for you, and this time at the turnaround, I'm going to use arpeggio-like fills at the turnaround. Now, I want to let you know that I'm only treating the turnaround as occurring at the seventh and eighth bars, and it's indicated on the music that you see in colored measures. I am not treating the 15th and 16th measure as a turnaround, since I'm not continuing with the song, nor is it going to the bridge. It ends at the 16th measure. Therefore, I'm treating the last two measures as final bars rather than as a turnaround, which means that it's going to continue to either turn back around to the melody again, the AA melody, or it's going to repeat the entire song again. I'm only treating the seventh and eighth measures as the turnaround. So once again, I'm going to play it for you, playing pretty close to the melody, and I hope that you listen to the melody as I play it before I get to the turnaround, because I'm playing the melody and using phrasing and ornamentation and all the things I've been talking about up to now. I'm not playing the melody straight. So listen for that, but also listen for what I play on the turnaround as I play it for you now in an arpeggiated manner. One, two, one, two, three. I'm going to play it once again for you, and I'm going to continue using different variations of phrasing and ornamentation that I've discussed with you, but when I get to the turnaround, I'm going to improvise freely. That is, I'm just going to play something that I hear in my mind that is not based on a scale, it's not based on an arpeggio, it's just free improvisation, but it does fit the harmonies. So once again, here is this time at the turnarounds, free improvisation. One, two, one, two, three. Now, I'm going to play an accompaniment for you of this song, and I invite you to join me and play along, starting out by making up scale-like patterns at the turnaround area, and then play it again. And when you feel very comfortable with it, move into arpeggiated versions at the turnaround. And when you feel comfortable, move then again into the free improvisation. Try each one until you get comfortable with it. Play it over and over. It's the only way to really learn and to really feel good about it. Just play it over and over until you feel comfortable with one way and then move into the next. So finally, you'll end up improvising freely at the turnarounds. And as you get familiar with this melody, don't be afraid to use the variations that I've mentioned, the ornamentation, all of the things that I've talked about, the ornamentation and the phrasing of the melody itself before you get to the turnaround. Just have fun with it and try to find different ways to, I call it, when I was a kid, I called it fancying up the melody. Make it fancy, but still let people know that it's the melody. So here we go again. One, two, one, two, three. I'd like to talk with you now about analyzing songs. It's very helpful to realize that all songs have different harmonic constructions, but as you begin to play more and more songs, you'll find that some of the songs are very much like other songs that you've played. Sometimes harmonically they're identical. Sometimes there are just bits and pieces. Occasionally it may be that the bridge of one song is like a bridge of another while the rest is completely different. Or it may be the part that's not the bridge, the AA and final A part. But as you begin to listen to each song, you begin to see, is it a 32-bar song or is it a 16-bar song? Or is it some version of that? Is it some song that's based on that but it's been changed? For instance, instead of it being 8, 8, and 8, and 8, it may be 7, 7, and then the middle is 10, and then the last part is 7. But this is just a variation of the 8, 8, and the 8, 8 following. It's four different sections there. The first two are the same. There's a middle part, and then there is a final section. And what has happened is, in a case of it being 7, 7, 10, and 7, it's simply they have changed the number of bars in each section. But there still are four sections. You might investigate each song in that manner. Find out if it's a 16-bar song. It may be a 12-bar song. The blues are 12 bars. There are even 8-bar blues. So investigate each song in terms of the amount of measures in the song and also the harmonic content. And use your experience, draw on your experience to answer questions for yourself. Is this song like any other song I've played? Is there a part of it that's reminiscent of some other song harmonically? Now, that will help you to be able to play this song, because if you've played the previous song, you can bring that experience into the new song. This is one way to learn. Another way is to get a good understanding about this AABA and to begin to see that many, many songs that have become popular have the same kind of bridge. Or there may be maybe only as few as 8 different bridges that have been used over the past 40 years that have been the most popular and most frequently used. These are some of the things to think about. And the other thing is, as you play a song, not only to play the melody, not only to phrase that melody, not only to use ornamentation, but even maybe out of tempo, just sit and think about the song and sort of hear some things that are harmonically involved in this song and just sit back and play. And I'd like to speak with you and play at the same time and show you what I mean. For instance, the song that we have been working on, Song of the Islands, without any tempo in mind, just to sit back and think about it and play parts of the melody in a very free way without it being in tempo, and think about scales that you can play against it, but they come to your mind. The thing is, you're thinking them in your mind. That's the important thing. For instance, like this. You can think of it in terms of just arpeggios. You're playing arpeggios based on the harmonic structure of the song. Chords, running the chords that are involved in arpeggiated manners, in scale manners, it really gets you inside the song. It really gets you to have a feeling, and then you can really begin to think of things that are just melodic. Now, I'm going to play, and I'm not going to play with accompaniment, because I want you to hear that in the lines that I play that come to my mind to play for you, you can hear a melody, but you'll also be able to sense the chords. So I'm going to play this in tempo for you without accompaniment. just to show you that I really am making up some things, I'm going to whistle along just a little bit as I play, and I'm whistling what I hear in my mind, and I'm playing it instantly. I was whistling it, I was hearing it in my mind and trying to find it at the same time. One other thing that is very helpful in playing a song is start with the first chord of a song and make up a little kind of a rhythm pattern and try to follow that same rhythm pattern throughout the song. I'm going to do a couple of these so that you can hear them. It's far better for you to listen to them than for me to try to explain this particular thing in words, since hearing it is worth more than a lot of words. The idea, though, is that you start with a little pattern based on the first chord, and as you move through the various harmonies of the song, you try to continue that rhythm pattern so that as you go from measure to measure and the chords change, there's still a relationship in the line you've created between each measure to the previous one. I'll show you what I mean. If we're using the song, Song of the Islands, we might start like this and continue in this manner. We might do that, or we might do this. We might do something like this. Any of those ways. In this particular last case, I went up the scale in an arpeggio manner on the first chord. I went down the next time. But what you really want to do is take a song, play it, play the melody, phrase the melody, ornamentation, all of the things we've talked about. It's almost as though you're taking that song and wringing it dry of all the possibilities. Get inside that song. Know it in every manner. And then as you begin to get ideas in your mind from playing all of the scales and the arpeggios and all of the variations and ornamentations, you will increase the possibility for you to imagine more varied and interesting things that you can play on this song. So I want you to continue with all of these exercises that we've had up to this time. Go over them until you feel very comfortable and are able to play any song that you want to play using these various treatments or variations. There are three elements that are in all good music: melody, harmony, and rhythm. Now, we can use these as building blocks to develop our own improvisation. What you have to do is think about your own playing and think about which of those elements are the weakest in your playing. That is, are you weaker in making up good melodies when you improvise, or are you weaker in the variety of harmonies that you use? Or are you weaker in your rhythmic pulse? That is, does it lack this spirit for swinging, for having this energy in your playing? Well, whichever of these elements is the weakest is the one you should be working on to develop. And then after that one, there's two elements left. Which one of those is the weakest? That's the next one you should work on. And what this does is it helps to develop your total improvisational skill and keeps you from being lopsided. You know, there are many musicians who are very strong in one of these, or two, but very few are strong in three. And those three, coupled with originality, is what makes the great, great players that we have today. One way that I like to think about it is that as an improviser, you have the possibility of really having a magnificent musical automobile with three cylinders. But if you're not using all three cylinders, you're kind of lopsided. You're not using all of the things to make your music rich. So I'd like to discuss each of these elements with you separately. Now, some of the things to think about when you strive to improve yourself in terms of melodic playing is not to use scales, not to use arpeggios, not to use licks and devices, but let something well up in you that is a kind of a musical line that you would be very happy singing this line, or it might sound very beautiful if you set words to it. It's a melody, and all melodies have a rise and a fall. They don't just move in a scale-like manner, an arpeggio, and they're not really predictable. There are little curves. There are little surprises. It goes up to a certain note, and it drops down to another note, and there's a little interest. There's tension. It's not a predictable kind of rise and fall. So keep that in mind. One of the best things you can do is, as you conceive this, is it singable? Is it lyrical? Is it something that a human voice might sing? And especially if you think of it in your mind first, there's every chance that it will be more melodic than if you were just to go to the guitar and think only of the chords. So keep that in mind. Do strengthen your playing melodically. I'll give you some examples of melodic and non-melodic playing. If I were, for instance, to use C, A minor, D minor, and G7 as a basic harmonic progression. And if I were to improvise, I would want to try to make it melodic. Now, I wouldn't be playing scales. I wouldn't be playing things like... And I wouldn't be playing arpeggios. But I would try to make something fit those chords, but it's melodic. Things like that. Another thing to consider is the standpoint of being a harmonic player. Try to avoid harmonizing all of your songs in the same manner. Try to find more variety in your harmonies. Not only the different inversions you use, but actually the treatment of each song. Avoid harmonizing similar progressions all the time. That is, when you hear a certain melody, do not strive to harmonize it in the same manner all the time. Try to find other chords that will work, interesting chords. Try to find harmonies that are not totally abrasive or discordant or create a lot of dissonance. Neither are they bland and tranquil. But really, the best music you can make is music that occasionally moves into some sort of tension, and then that tension resolves itself. This enriches your music. So as you play, and you play harmonically, do not simply run chords. In other words, you don't want to take a solo where what you're doing is simply running the chords or the scales of the song. But you want to make up melodies, and those melodies are rich melodies, but they infer all of the harmonies that you're using. This will be of tremendous help to you in enriching your playing harmonically. Now, another thing we need to talk about is rhythmic playing. And there's many things to think about in terms of rhythm. One of the things to bring to your attention is, as you play, strive to be a good timekeeper. And by that I mean strive not to rush or drag the tempo. Try to stay in the tempo. Now, once you're in the tempo, there are several ways of even thinking about that. You can think about playing on top of the beat, or on the beat, or a little bit behind the beat. But the thing is, it's your attitude in relation to the beat, but you're still not rushing the tempo. I think the best way I can explain it is if you were sitting in a chair You're sitting in that chair and no other chair, and you're not standing, but sitting in that chair. Yet within that chair, you can be sitting forward in the chair, which would be very much like playing on top of the beat. You're not rushing the beat, but you're anticipating. You're sitting in front. The other way is you're sitting squarely in the middle of the chair, which is you're playing on the beat. And the other way, you're very laid back or relaxed. You're laid back because you're laying back in the chair with your back against the support there. Yet, in music, it's the same way. Without rushing and without dragging, try to play in such a way that at any given time, you can play in on top of the beat, a little aggressive but not rushing, or you can play simply on the beat, which is very square on the beat, or you can sort of play behind the beat. That is, you're playing, thinking of the beat, staying with the beat, but kind of always playing catch-up, just a little bit behind it, but not rushing it. Now, another thing to think about in terms of playing rhythmically is as you play any given tempo, try to think about, if it's very fast, try to think about playing halftime. That is, if the tempo were 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4, in that manner, try to think about playing half as fast, to be playing that tempo, but you are playing things that are half as fast. Another thing would be to think of playing double time. You're playing twice as fast. For instance, if I were playing a tempo this way, 1-2-3-4. This same tempo I could be playing, but I would be also playing double time against it. I'm playing twice as fast as the metronomic beat. This gives you variety in your playing. Another thing to think about is, as you play, to think about the rhythmic impulse, that is, to play it in such a way that you play it very legato or very smoothly, that there's almost no picking. There's very little picking. There's very little percussion. It's almost as though you were playing. Very delicate, very lacy, very filmy. Another way is that it's just simply very even and you're picking. It'd be very similar to on a horn. It'd be legato tonguing. It's just very smooth, but it's all mostly picked. Another way is that by using downstrokes on the guitar and playing short notes, you play a sort of a jabbing type, a very percussive. It has a lot of punch in it. And this is a rhythmic consideration. It makes your playing sound more urgent. It makes it sound more explosive, and it makes it swing more when you need that kind of emphasis, such as like this. Instead of playing, I'm using mostly down picks, and I'm playing very